Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
A big weekend coming up for track and field. Four student athletes are headed to Eugene, Oregon for outdoor nationals. Also, the final Bubas Cup standings have been released. The Red Wolves with a really strong finish. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But the big news this past week was the announcement of the new vice chancellor for intercollegiate athletics. He was officially announced at a press conference this past Wednesday. He's now the 14th athletic director in school history. And we want to welcome him in right now. It's Chris Pesman. How you doing, Mr. Pesman?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, fellas. Looking forward to getting to know you guys and having a conversation about Arkansas State, but really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you guys today and start getting acclimated.
All right. So there were several people that came up afterwards, and of course they're saying, hey, what do you think of the new guy? And The thing that I kept going back to was, you know, he and his family, I know your wife Marisol was there, your youngest daughter Sarah was there at the press conference as well, and I had a chance to visit with both of them and really enjoyed that. But the thing that stood out most to me was the fact that you seemed genuinely excited to be at Arkansas State.
Yeah, it was something that had come up. And one of those jobs you always, when you're in this business, you kind of always keep an eye on. I remember the incredible run y'all had with hiring coaches, specifically around football. I think, what, 5 in 5 years? And and the caliber of coaches that was hired by that administration was, I'd put that up there in the all-time great runs. But it's a job that there's great alignment on campus. And with that, that just opens up so many possibilities. And just, you know, having David Rear at Houston and getting to know Terry Mahajer, Jason Penry, I think you guys know Jason. Jason's a consultant in our space that I got to know many years ago. And he's always spoken so fondly of Arkansas State and Jonesboro. It just kind of came together. And there were some other opportunities that were out there that weren't as enticing by any stretch of the imagination. And this was one we were ready to put our teeth into and hopefully have a chance to have a conversation about. And we were fortunate that happened and had an incredible opportunity to be there on Wednesday and be announced as the 14th athletic director. It's really humbling. And it's something that we can't wait to get to Jonesboro. And I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but, you know, we took the job sight unseen. We were just going off of what people had told us about it. But the consensus that we had gotten from literally everybody, and this is, you know, more than one, was just, it's a great town. And as soon as we got there, we felt it. You know, we went driving around the first night. We got to the hotel and we could just sense it. And once you start meeting the people that fill that town, it makes it even more special. So we can't wait to get there and get going.
So I told you this on Wednesday, and you met with the staff. I mean, the other thing you do when you kind of hear this is the direction it's going is I grab my phone, I text David Rear. Literally, my first text to him is just, how'd we do? And his immediate text back was home run. And we went back and forth there for a little bit. But that probably went both ways. So when you're looking at this job and you know, well, hey, I can go ask David Rear about it. What do you say about Arkansas State?
Absolutely was one of the hardest decisions he ever had leaving. Same thing, you know, you watch Terry Mahajer's interview at UCF when he starts talking about Arkansas State and he gets emotional because of the people and the role the community had in their lives. And Rear and Brian Gerwig, I don't want to leave Brian out because Brian was assistant with Dave and then came back to Arkansas State. Brian was very involved early in the process with me, just going, hey, I gave your name to some people on the search firm and just heads up, you may be hearing from them, which was really kind and thoughtful of Brian. But yeah, when you just think about it, you think about the comprehensive excellence. You know, I didn't know as much about the town, but you think about just what the athletic department has done. And then you reference the Bubas Cup and the year they're coming off of, you know, the stable of coaches is really, it's incredible. We're very fortunate with the coaches we have. And again, I'm going to go back to Dr. Shields and Dr. Kelly, and then the administrative staff on campus and the trustees. When I got to Houston we had a singular purpose in our mind, which was we wanted to get into a P5 league. And you have that same alignment here in many ways about what they want to see from Arkansas State Athletics and the impact that it has on the university and the community and how we leverage our success into everybody else's success and vice versa. And that is what really gets me excited, because that means you've got really a very high ceiling. And trust me, the floor is pretty high too. So, you know, I reference is we've got a really good foundation. The first floor is built and we're working on the second story now and just going to keep pushing this thing up.
The press release came out before Wednesday. I think everything came out Monday afternoon. And one thing that really impressed me, Chris, was just all the quotes from everybody that chimed in on the hire, and everybody, and a lot of familiar names from the University of Houston, from Andre Ware to Kelvin Sampson, Willie Fritz, Carl Lewis. You don't usually have one of the great Olympians of all time on press releases like this, but you mentioned Terry Mahajer, and he was one of the guys that was quoted as well. And we think a lot of Terry around here and the job that he did while he was in the role you're in now. He had some really, really good things to say about you, but how instrumental was Terry in this process? How much did you talk to him leading up to this hire?
It's interesting. Terry would reference Arkansas State a lot when we were in the American, and also as we were working together as both our schools were going into the Big 12. And Terry and I got to know each other really well, because as we were going into the Big 12, we were trying to peer set what everybody else was doing and what we were doing, and kind of using each other as stalking horses to make sure we weren't getting out of balance as we were trying to grow into a new league. And he talked about Arkansas State quite a bit. And then when things started to develop, you know, he certainly was very helpful with just talking to me about who the people were, talking about Johnny Allison and Governor Beebe, things like that, people that I needed to make sure I was paying attention to and aware of through the process. And then the office just kept talking about the people in the community. And honestly, that is a constant theme that comes up a lot with anybody that you talk about with Arkansas State, is just the people in Jonesboro. That carries over to Rear and Gerwig and Jason, all were the same way. But Terry specifically was really, he talked to me about the Embassy Suites. He was talking about when he went up to a national meeting to go pitch, trying to get that hotel brought on campus. And you can feel his fingerprints all over that place. He talked obviously very fondly about the end zone facility, and he should. That, I mean, literally at the University of Houston, that was my last project, and it opens in about a month. And what you all have is exactly what we're building. There's so many opportunities there, but there's so much that we have that is at a very high level that we can use to compete with at a national level. And that's what gets me excited, is the opportunity to win. These are unique jobs in the sense that our initial mission is obviously education, making sure, you know, we help develop young people into better versions of themselves and then can contribute back to the community. But we also want to win. Make no mistake about it. That's what we get graded on. What I like about Arkansas State is it's a program, a department that can win in every sport. There's some areas that we need to get better at, and what Mike's done with baseball this last year and showing us a path to building a consistent winner. Those are the things that I look forward to take advantage of. You know, obviously football and basketball drive most of the conversations. But you think about what track and field has done, what volleyball is doing, and I could go through all the whole list. But again, you referenced the Bubba's Cup, which I'm glad Jerry corrected me, because the first time I saw it, you know, you read a Bubba's, and he corrected me really quick before the press conference. But that's what really gets me jacked, because we can come here and I want to win the damn thing. And I don't mean that lightly. Like, we're in a position where we can build consistent winners and compete at a high level. You got to build this thing up. You got to start winning conference, then you start competing at a national level. That's what we're aiming to do. You know, we've got great coaches and great facilities and great support, and I know we can get this done.
So your legacy at your alma mater forever, like, you're always going to be the fellow who was the AD when Houston went to the Big 12. And everybody talks about, you know, those realignment moves and the financial windfall that comes with it and this and that. But they don't talk about the hard part. What was the hard part about making that move?
Yeah, just trying to catch up. When I got to Houston, our operating budget was about $45 million, $48 million. When I left, the budget that we had booked and were working on was $98 million. And we had done that over, you know, 6.5 years. The average in the Big 12 at that point was about 125. If you look now with rev share, that average in the Big 12 budget's going to be closer to 145. And so, you know, Houston's still at 98. And so what you're trying to do is figure out a way to grow in a thoughtful manner and then have the revenue support that growth. And then that's a lot. You know, across the board, we were probably 30 to 40% lighter in budgets and in personnel across the board in the department. And then again, you want to win. You're not going to the Big 12 to be the doormat. Obviously, we had high success, inordinate amount of success with basketball. What Kelvin's done with the program there is it's one of the all-time great stories of a program's reascendence. But for us, we needed to get more consistent with winning in football, and particularly in our spring sports. And that's what's hard is the challenge is you really have to invest in the revenue side of it so you can have it support the growth. And during that, you can incrementally invest in the other sports, the other subsets of departments you need, but it's not matching the growth of the other areas. And it's easy to get frustrated, right? And with baseball and some other programs, you know, those are just tough ways to find money. What's the point in making changes if you're not going to reinvest more money and more resources into a program? You're better off sticking with people that you know are doing a great job in every other aspect, but maybe aren't getting it done as well in the field. So yeah, that's a long answer to a short question.
You mentioned you come into a situation where there's already a lot of really good coaches in place, an athletic program that's coming off one of the more successful athletic seasons in the history of the school. But you're a football guy originally. You played at the University of Houston. I know you've spent a lot of time in the football world. So I am curious, what have the initial conversations with Butch Jones been like?
They've been great. Butch has been an incredible resource for me. As this job came into focus, talked to him quite a bit. I'm in Orlando right now for NACTA and Lead One, or what the new version of Lead One meetings are, which is a consortium of athletic directors. And we're all trying to get in a room and figure out where this business is going. And getting this job at this time was a perfect time to get here and get reacclimated and see everybody and catch up on just the newest gossip and trends of our industry. But Butch was very, very helpful through the whole process, just talking to me about kind of where their strengths and weaknesses for him, for his department, and then just what he sees as opportunities for us as a department and an institution. And then also talking a lot about the community. His kids are about the same age as mine, just trying to understand, you know, how my kids will fit in and things like that. But he's been a huge resource, and I really look forward to working with him. I've heard great things about him. John Gilbert, who's the athletic director at East Carolina, worked with Butch at Tennessee, and I had a chance to talk to John about Butch. And, you know, everybody's praises have been effusive, and just, you know, knowing what Butch has done as a coach on the field and what he's done so far at Arkansas State, I'm really excited about the future of Arkansas State football. It's fun because Butch has got, he's an active mind. And so he's always thinking and popping ideas off of me. And I appreciate that. And that's something that I welcome, because, you know, as an athletic director, you can't be everywhere at once. You can't see everything. You know, everybody thinks you're the all-knowing eye, but in reality, it's helpful to have people that are giving you feedback, good and bad. And that's what the relationship I feel like I've developed with Butch in a very short period of time is that, like, hey, this works. We've had some challenges with this, but there may be a path through, things like that. And that's helpful for an athletic director as you're getting into a new role, you know, where you're new, you know, you're not coming up through the pipeline in that department. And so you kind of figure out where the spots are that you can jump into and help right away.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. That's Impact, spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T, club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with A-State Athletic Director Chris Pesman here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Kavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Kavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at KavanaughCars.com. Chris, you've seen college athletics from so many different perspectives. First as a student athlete, you eventually became team captain at Houston, you've been a GA, director of football ops, 12 years on the executive management team at Reliant Park in Houston. You've been an associate AD, now being an athletic director for a second time. And I say all that, and by the way, really impressive just reading off that list. But when did becoming an athletic director really become a goal of yours?
Actually, pretty early on. When I was a GA, I was a graduate assistant for Ken Helton. If you remember him, his son Clay and Tyson are, you know, coaches at Georgia Southern and Western Kentucky. They were both players.
Clay was here for about a month.
I've heard that story. Story for another time with maybe an adult beverage, right? but I realized pretty early on, maybe coaching wasn't in the cards for me. You know, wearing Sans belt shorts, twirling a whistle around my finger, maybe was I needed to go a different path. And I was really lucky. The athletic director of the University of Houston that time was a gentleman by the name of Bill Carr, who had previously been an AD at Florida. And he went on to run a search firm after he left U of H. Mm-hmm. And then Chet Glavchuk came in as AD. The point being is when Bill was there, he brought me out of being, you know, a GA coach and said, hey, you know, I want you to sit at my desk and be my assistant, which was basically a glorified intern. I think it was making like $13,000 and was ecstatic over it. But I was sitting outside his office during the breakup of the Southwest Conference and just seeing how we got left behind really just never sat right, still doesn't. And it just kind of got me thinking about what my future was going to be. And that's kind of when I figured out I want to be an AD. In fact, wanting to be the AD at my alma mater at the University of Houston. So I was pretty intentional about the career path I took with jobs from that point on. I was able to stay in the athletic department and take over facilities and operations. And there's some stories for that when we were doing special events. And I thought for sure I was going to get fired, but didn't, thankfully. we had club soccer matches from Mexico and it got interesting real fast. And then one night we did a rave and I thought it was a dance contest. So I learned early on, keep my head on a swivel. But when I went to Reliant, that opportunity when that building and that and the team were being formed was an incredible opportunity. As a, you know, I was in my 30s to be around that. But also, you know, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo is one of the primary tenants there. And in the state of Texas, if you're anybody, somehow you're affiliated with the rodeo. And so getting to be immersed around those organizations. And particularly if you think the rodeo, you guys may not know much about it, but they have 30,000 volunteers. And their system is very similar to the collegiate model where their volunteers are like season ticket holders. And you could see how they integrated themselves into the community and the way that they developed their event, which is basically a 20-day run of a concert every night, a level one concert, and then a rodeo all around it. And then the entire site, 350 acres, is filled up with convention space and a million other things. The point is those were relationships I knew I could bring forward to hopefully if I ever had the chance to be at the University of Houston. And then subsequently going to Berkeley, Cal, and being around there and getting a different view of the world and how they do business was really, really interesting. And each one of those steps were really intentional. And so that brought me to the University of Houston and those lessons I get to bring to Arkansas State. And that's something I'm very, very excited about.
When you mentioned the other day, you know, kind of being within earshot of the Southwest Conference falling apart, that was cool. And then the other thing you talked about, you know, playing and being a part of the game where, you know, you guys did what you did to SMU when they got off the death penalty. You were a part of a team that scored 95. You mentioned, you know, Andre Ware gave one of the quotes when you were hired. Of course, you played quarterback on that team. I thought he had a big day. I was looking at stats. He threw for 340 yards and 5 touchdowns in the second quarter that day. Come on, why y'all have to do them that way?
Well, it's funny. So when I was in high school, I went to a high school called Stratford High School on the west side of town. 10 years earlier, Craig James had come out of there and they had won the state championship against Plano in 1978. Well, flash forward 10 years and it's 1987 and Chris Pesman is at Stratford High School and we're playing the state championship in Austin against Plano. You know, I was going to go to SMU out of high school. That's where I wanted to play. And that's when they got the death penalty. So they were like, look, they only had 15 scholarships the first year. And they were like, hey, you're something like, you know, 16 through 20. Walk on for a year and we'll put you on next year. Well, I was coming from a single parent home and that wasn't going to happen. So I ended up at Houston. That game against SMU was the first game I got to play in college. And it was just covering kickoffs. And I was gassed. I think I had like 10 reps, you know, in a, you know, 100 yard sprints. But when we get settled in, I've got a coaster and it's the photograph of the scoreboard from that day. And we had 1,000 yards.
Yep.
It was like 1,050 yards of offense. I mean, it's just some things that happened when we were running the run and shoot that you just, I don't know that will be replicated. I mean, the air raids come pretty close. We were running track meets on people. I mean, literally it was up and down the field. It was so much fun. And all our games were like 4 hours. I mean, they were forever because, you know, the clock stopped then on everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we'd kick off at like 8 o'clock and be like 12:30 in the morning. And we're like, hey, can we just run the ball, please? And knowing John Jenkins, that was not going to happen.
It's fun getting to know you a little bit. We're going to get to know you more and more as we go along here. But take us through these next few weeks and months as we lead up to football season. This time is you try to get acclimated at Arkansas State. What is that going to look like for you?
The official start date is, you know, beginning of July, but, you know, I'm already in it. For me, you know, I want to meet with all the coaches, understand where they are and where they see themselves in their program, what their needs are. This is something we got to get done as soon as possible. This is a, you know, this is a red issue versus wants where, hey, you know, I want to do this, I want to do that. But in starting to prioritize the wants and needs so we can get on the same page what's necessary. And then we can try to figure out what resources we can bring to bear. The other part is, you know, obviously the staff, making sure they're stable. We've got some spots we've got to fill. And that's, I've got to get a sense of where our strengths and weaknesses are and what we need. I've got a sense of that now, you know, really primarily external. Fundraising is going to be a huge advantage for us as we partner with campus and really integrate ourselves. What I really like about a plan that Dr. Shields has is the one pack mentality. Yeah. Where we're bringing all our resources to bear across campus and in our department to help solve issues. That's something that is, I think, going to become more and more the standard business best practice in our industry as we move ahead. And I'm not just talking about Arkansas State. I'm talking about if you're at Michigan to the smallest junior college, how do you activate university resources to everybody's greater good? And that money doesn't necessarily need to flow to athletics. As long as it goes to back to the central fund and we're helping make that happen, then that's what we need to do. Because if we can help raise everybody's tide, that, you know, raises all boats. So that with the coaches and the staff, you know, I haven't been here for a game yet. I want to understand how we're operating our game day experiences and where we can make improvements, you know, right away. Some things will be low hanging fruit and some things are going to take a little bit longer, you know, as we try to figure out how to monetize game day. And this doesn't mean we're trying to be in everybody's pocket. This doesn't mean that I'm trying to increase prices or anything like that, but just, are we taking advantage of every opportunity when people come to watch a game? And that goes for football, basketball, baseball, track and field, tennis, soccer, everything across the spectrum. How do we give a game day experience that people want to continue to come back to? What I really appreciate about Jonesboro, you know, having been in major markets my entire career, is being in a college town where you can stand out. And I think about that spring baseball season and how we can better align ourselves with the community and get people out there. Obviously, our first get is football and volleyball and soccer. Those are the first sports for us this spring. And, you know, I've got to get up to speed really quick about what we're doing and how we do it. And so, you know, understanding all our third-party contracts. I mean, I won't go too far in the weeds, but there's quite a bit to understand really quickly. But and most importantly for me is getting out in the community. We're going to be really intentional about that, about, you know, just being social, being seen, being accessible. Those are all things that are really, really important.
You mentioned the One Pack initiative, and that really kind of got my attention when Dr. Shields was talking about that the other day. And it seems like a simple thing, but really you don't see it at too many places around the country right now. You see the athletic side and the university side. And there's so many places that they're asking for money in all different directions. And one thing we've talked about a lot over the years is just, especially over the last couple of years in the days of NIL now, with all the donor fatigue, these same donors keep getting asked for money from all different directions. And to have this One Pack initiative, I'm guessing that's kind of the goal here. You're trying to cut down on some of that donor fatigue and let everybody know, hey, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah, great example. You're a donor for us or at any institution. Typically, you know, you've got the box office calling you for ticket sales. And then if you have a premium seat, you've got somebody in development or a premium entity that's calling to talk to you about your premium gift. and your ticket. Then, you know, you've got advancement calling you for donations just in general. And that could be through the department or the university or any entity around it. And then if you're a sponsor or, you know, you own a company, then I'm going to you through typically a third party multimedia rights partner, in our case, Learfield, also asking for you to participate. And then you've got the collectives that were out there also trying to raise money. So at any one point, I've got a minimum of five entities that are reaching out to you to try to get money out of you. And what we're trying to do is simplify that process and streamline it. So that way the campus and athletics are going to you with one ask. So we're not wearing you out. And from a university perspective, we're maximizing that gift ask instead of, you know, hey, I may ask you for $5,000 and somebody else is asking you for $25,000. You're like, hey, I'll give you $5,000. You guys just go away. You know, that kind of deal. And I get it as a donor, as somebody, you know, that has the ability to do that, it gets tiring after a while. And when you're dealing with a, you know, a smaller community, you really tax them. And so that's what we're trying to be mindful of. It's not going to be seamless. It's going to take a little bit and there's going to be some learning curve with this. But what I appreciate is the willingness of campus to take that mindset, because I'll give you an example. How much do we spend a year on utilities at the institution I came from? We spent $25 million a year on energy, and we were in the energy capital of the world. Why are we not figuring out a way to leverage that energy spend for a business back opportunity? You know, that should be somewhere between $1.5 to $3 million. And if you do 3 to 5 of those deals, all of a sudden you found, you know, maybe $5 or $6 million that you didn't have before, then that we can figure out a way to move around in the system to help elevate everybody's needs. That's what I appreciate about what Dr. Kelly and Dr. Shields, their alignment and the university's administrative alignment and being receptive to that. Because to your point, everybody at most of these places really siloed, and their ability to adjust is difficult because they've been operating in a higher education system, you know, and they've been institutionalized. I don't know how to say it. Most are not rev gen specialists. They're very conservative. That's okay. That's what higher ed has been. But as we look at, you know, federal funding issues, the increased cost of doing business, whether it's rev share, coaches' salary, scholarships, all those things, we have to find new ways to generate revenue. But we also have to do it in a very thoughtful way where we're not just wearing our people out. That's what we're trying to solve.
Well, Chris, it's been a lot of fun visiting with you today, and just can't wait for you to get back here and get officially started at Arkansas State. And I know our fans are looking forward to getting to know you as well.
Yes, sir. Well, look, guys, I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with y'all today. My family and I, you know, we came into it pretty excited and we left even more excited, and we were on the high end of that going in, and everybody has been absolutely incredible, you know, to the point it's very humbling. And look, we're going to win, and we're going to win a lot here, and we're going to have a lot of fun doing it, and we're going to do it together. And I can't wait to work with you guys. You guys have been absolutely incredible. Can't wait to get here full time and have some fun doing it. Wolves up.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is DeMario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. We mentioned at the top of the program that the final Bubas Cup standings came out this past week. The Red Wolves just across the board, and that's what the Bubas Cup is all about, just across the entire athletic spectrum, scored a school record 139 points in the final Bubas Cup standings. It's the best finish for a full athletics year since the 1999-2000 athletic season. And it was 13.5 points behind Texas State. So the Red Wolves finished second behind Texas State, who won the Bubas Cup. And we always talk about, well, it'd be great to be able to score points for bowling because that doesn't count towards the Bubas Cup, and you're a national power in that sport. And then you don't get any points for softball. That ends up hurting you. But still, a great, great finish in the final Bubas Cup standings. Really indicative of just how great of a year it was.
Sun Belt gives championships in 20 sports. We compete in 15 of those 20. As you mentioned, you know, we get nothing for bowling. The championships that we don't participate in, men's soccer, women's swimming and diving, men's tennis, beach volleyball, and softball. And then, like I said, bowling is its own thing that doesn't get represented. Texas State, who won the Bubas Cup, competes in one more sport than we do. Their dashes are all the same. They don't have men's soccer. They don't have swimming and diving. They don't have men's tennis. They don't play beach volleyball. But they play softball. You know, we're, the only team in the league that doesn't. So you knew that was going to make it tough because they're good in softball. You knew you were just giving points away there and end up losing 12 points in softball. So without it, they're still ahead by a point and a half, which leads to your question about really the only one that matters.
The Bobos Cup.
The Bobos Cup. Because it is the one where we, and this goes back to obviously before I was in the department, but back, just on the air, you know, doing my show. And, you know, the total, because of the stuff we're talking about, it just is not the most fair way to do that. So we feel like who has the highest average points scored per sport, that's who wins the Bobos Cup. It's your it's your number of Bubas Cup points divided by the sports you compete in. And that way we feel like whoever scores had the highest average per sport in a year, that's who gets the trophy. And credit to Texas State, they still would have won even the Bobos Cup. So it was 9.53 to 9.26. That's when you get to include softball. And so even if you took softball out, they would have been a point and a half ahead. So they would have won, even without softball, they would have won Bobo's Cup by 1/10 of a point. Right. 9.36 to 9.26.
So no asterisk next to this Bubas Cup.
No,
if you win the Bubas Cup, but you don't win the Bobos
huge
Cup.
Huge asterisk. But I went through, you know, 10 out of our 15 sports. You go back and look at how many points they scored. 10 of the 15 finished in the top third of the league in their sport this past year. It really is a good year. Things are going well from a competitive standpoint. Yeah, I'm trying to look at, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different sports. 7 out of the 15 scored double-digit points. Things are going well there competitively. Everybody is in a good place for the most part.
You know, we're sitting here talking about the end of the athletic season, but athletics are still going on.
That's right.
At least for 4 A-State student-athletes. Outdoor Nationals are being held this week in Eugene, Oregon, and the Red Wolves well represented. We're sending 4 student athletes to Eugene. Colby Eddowes, former podcast guest, competing in the decathlon. Noah Isaiah will be in the hammer throw. Bradley Gelmert, who's just had a phenomenal year, a phenomenal career at A-State, competing in the men's pole vault. And Carly Pujol, how about the year she's had? She's competing in the women's pole vault. So we'll be paying close attention to that this week.
Sure will. I mean, the Sun Belt's got a bunch of kids in the Nationals. Sun Belt's got a team still playing baseball in Omaha.
How about that?
Coming up.
Congratulations to Coastal.
Absolutely. You know, they've lost 2 games. I went back and looked. They dropped 2 midweek games like a week or so after the Red Wolves left town. A-State was the last Sun Belt team to hand them a loss. They've dropped 2 games in the 2 months since. But they're undefeated in the postseason.
Overall, though, they've won 23 in a row, which is unreal.
Yeah, swept through the Sun Belt tournament, swept through their regional, went on the road and swept Auburn in the super regional. It's not an accident.
Nice little feather in your cap, though, for Mike Silva's Red Wolves to say, hey, we're the last team to beat them on the weekend.
Yeah.
Number one, and the last Sun Belt team to beat them this year, and that was all the way back on April 6th.
Don't forget, gave up 6 earned runs that whole weekend out there.
That was where you really started to sense the turnaround with the program, and we talked about it here, but to pitch that well against that team and then to go in after 2 close losses Friday and Saturday and win on Sunday, I thought it was a turning point, and you don't want to over-exaggerate things. It's a turning point in the season, but maybe even a turning point with the program as well. Because, and I think you can even take more confidence with it now in the offseason, saying what a big accomplishment that was going in and playing a team that's now in the College World Series as well as you did.
It'd be great. I hope we, a couple weeks from now, we'll get back together and say, hey, we took a game off the national champions.
And we're recording this on Monday. It's going to be interesting. I know this comes out on Tuesday, but we're going to be paying close attention later on to what happens with Murray State and Duke. A Murray State program that a few years ago, we said we're not going to go over there anymore because the field's not in good enough shape. And they're one win away from the College World Series now, which I would have never dreamed in a million years that would have been possible. It's kind of like FAU going to the Final Four. We never thought that would be possible either.
Yeah, you see, in you know, baseball, it's pretty neat where, like, you certainly know this too, being in the Sun Belt, it's about, can you get in and get hot? Get in, and that's the hard part, right? Yeah. I mean, get in, and then a lot of times it's amazing, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we've talked about it a lot before. It's amazing how seldom it is that the, quote, number one team wins the College World Series. It almost never happens.
Very, very rare. All right, anything else we need to talk about here?
Nope, just putting the finishing touches on football game themes. That part's done, but really putting the finishing touches on promo items. It didn't take long to get folks trained up to start asking, hey, what are you giving away? So we'll have the answer to those questions coming up sooner than later.
I know you hate doing this, but we got to give props to our man, Jerry Scott. He knows how to put on a press conference. And we were even talking about it with Chris Pesman after we finished interviewing him, how impressed he was with the turnout and the press conference itself. But, you know, there's a reason. We know how to do a press conference around here, and Jerry and his team did a great job, Mark and Davey, both there and helping out with that as well. But I thought everybody, fans included, everybody who showed up, it was neat to see all of our coaches there and just the kind of support we saw for Chris Pesman's press conference last Wednesday.
Yeah, we know how to hire somebody and make them feel like a big deal. And this is a big deal and exciting to get to work.
Thanks to Chris Pesman for joining us today. Really enjoyed that conversation. Thanks to Jerry Scott for helping set that up as well. For everyone that's been a part of this one, for Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.